Good morning. This is Talking Animals. My guest today will be Rick Ducharme, founder and director of First Coast No More Homeless Pets in Jacksonville, Florida. In the decade or so since he launched First Coast, Ducharme has helped drastically lower the number of pets euthanized and dramatically increase the number of pets spayed and neutered there. First, though, we'll kick off the show with a vintage animal tune of sorts. This is Gene Vincent with Catman here on Talking Animals.
Catman's a coming, you better look out. Catman's a coming, running about. Catman's a coming, looking for a girl. Better hide your sister, my hand. C is for the crazy hairdo that he wears around. A is for the arms that he'll sneak around your waist. T is for the taste of the lips belong to you, Catman.
Catman! Ah! Get it! Go!
M is for the main things that this mean man does. A is for all the hearts that he has ever broke. N is for the names of the list you may be on. Yeah, man.
Catman! Rah!
Catman looking for a woman all day long. I better watch out because of he is in your midst. I better watch out or you're gonna be kissed. I better watch out because of he is in your midst. Catman.
Catman! Yeah!
Better watch out because I'm the Catman. Catman.
All right, that was Gene Vincent with Catman. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals, and my guest today is Rick Ducharme, founder and director of First Coast No More Homeless Pets in Jacksonville, Florida, where he became a major influential figure by helping to significantly reduce the number of pets euthanized there and dramatically increase the number of pets spayed and neutered, including feral or community cats in Duval County. So, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing us at dj@wmnf.org. Let's welcome Rick Ducharme to Talk Animals. Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Duncan, and thanks for having me on Talking Animals.
Thanks so much for joining us today on Talking Animals. And boy, we have a lot to talk about. In a moment, of course, I'd like to talk to you about, you know, founding First Coast No More Homeless Pets a little over a decade ago. But it's something of a prelude. Let's talk a little bit about your life before First Coast. I mean, you have kind of a story and background not often associated with people leading animal welfare or rescue organizations. So maybe you could just kind of fill us in about the pre-First Coast Rick Ducharme story.
Oh, sure. We can certainly do that. I think one of the trends that we're actually seeing in animal welfare is people outside of the normal animal welfare industry becoming more involved. And I think this is partially because as they see that there is actually a solution to the problem of pet overpopulation rather than just an endless treadmill of killing dogs and cats in shelters, that they're called into that type of work rather than, you know, who wants to get involved in work where, you know, the job and it really requires you to kill thousands of animals? And so once there is a real solution to that, I think people from outside of the industry do want to get involved so that they can make, you know, make the changes needed to to reach that goal. But I was in heavy equipment trailer sales before I became involved in animal welfare. I was always interested in animal welfare and did some volunteer work on the side here or there, mostly donated money, and worked in the heavy equipment trailer sales industry for 20-some years before I founded First Coast No More Homeless Pets, first on just a volunteer basis, and then after it got to be too large to run on a volunteer basis, I left retired and volunteered full-time for a few years, and then actually the group was big enough to start to pay me a salary. So that's where we're at now, and we've made a lot of great progress.
But yeah, well, I certainly want to delve into that. What just to back up for a moment, though, Rick, what was the catalyst, so to speak, I guess, from the period where you were interested, you were involved, you were volunteering, you were donating, to taking the leap and saying, hey, that's not enough for me. I really want to, you know, kind of plunge in more feet first.
Well, in the, this was the late 90s, I had heard Peter Marsh speak, and this is when I was still working in heavy equipment trailers, and I traveled a lot with that job and traveled a lot for my own fun. And I attended a conference in Mansfield, Massachusetts, put on for a group back then called Doing Things for Animals. And at that conference, it was called the No Kill Conference. And at that conference, I heard a person, Peter Marsh, speak about a program in New Hampshire that was a targeted spay and neuter program. And after this program had been operating for about 10 years, they had become a no-kill community. In fact, the whole state of New Hampshire qualified as no-kill and still does to this day over a decade later. And I'm like, wow, if they can do that in New Hampshire, we could probably do that in Jacksonville.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was in Jacksonville one day, probably getting ready to head out of town, and I saw in the newspaper that the mayor, Mayor Delaney back then, was putting together a task force on animal care and protective services, or animal care and control, as it was called back then.
Mm-hmm.
Been looking for volunteers to serve on that. So I sent a letter to the mayor's office saying, you know, that I thought I might be good on this task force because I'd studied the animal control and animal pet overpopulation issues for years. And I was also, you know, a very interested property owner and taxpayer in Jacksonville, and I wanted to make sure our tax money was spent wisely. And surprisingly, I guess to me anyway, I was put on that task force, and I sort of went to the first task force meeting armed with a 3-ring binder full of information for each one of the task force members about the no-kill movement and targeted spay and neuter and the impact that it could have on communities and feral cats and stuff like that. And so I was given a subcommittee chair position on the task force, which really means you get to do all the work, and but you also get to set the agenda. And so I made sure that every meeting started with, you know, targeted spay and neuter discussions until we all agreed upon that, and then we were able to move on to other things. And it worked out really well. And the task force submitted a 17-page recommendation to the mayor's office, and one of those was a targeted spay and neuter program. And the city eventually put out a proposal, or request for proposals, actually, for a targeted spay and neuter program. And I was encouraged by several people to put together an organization and submit a proposal. And our proposal was selected. Actually, it was the only one that was submitted, I think, that really really focused on the targeted spay and neuter like they were looking for.
Sure.
And so we were selected to run that program for the city, and that was in 2002.
So Rick, for people listening who may not be as steeped in it, you know, by inference it's probably fairly clear to figure out, but maybe you could just define what a targeted spay and neuter program really, really means.
Absolutely, and that's a great question, because, you know, us in the industry, we sort of get used to the jargon and understand that. And even within the industry, there's a little bit of confusion.
Mm-hmm.
When I talk about targeted spay and neuter programs, what I'm talking about is targeting populations of animals and pet owners that are contributing the most animals to the animal shelters. And studies have been done to help us decide who we should target with these programs. And some of these studies show that as much as 80 to 90% of the pet overpopulation problem comes from as few as 3% of pet owners. And that tends to be low-income pet owners who cannot afford to get their pets spayed or neutered, and they end up having litter after litter that ends up in the animal shelter, or they keep them until they get, you know, big size, trying to find them homes or thinking they're going to do the right thing and keep all the pets, and they continue to breed, and then as they get to be larger dogs, they end up at the shelter because it's a lot more difficult to keep several big dogs than a bunch of puppies, so... Mm-hmm. And so that's what we do. And when I talk about targeted, for the most part, to me, the gold standard of targeting is low-income targeted spay and neuter programs. Okay. And that's really what we specialize here in Jacksonville. Now, there are other ways to target geographically. You can pick zip codes that contribute a lot of animals to the animal shelter, although invariably those zip codes are going to be the zip codes where the low-income low-income residents are sort of grouped, and so that's what we find is if you just target low-income people, you're really getting to the root of the problem. And it's not that these people care any less for their pets, maybe care just as much or even maybe more than other people and other groups. However, the fact is that if a spay or neuter costs you $100 or $200 or $300, which is, you know, what a private practice veterinarian normally charges and really reflects the real cost of that surgery, then you end up, they just can't afford it.
Yeah.
You're making $200 or $300 a week, or even worse yet, making only $800 or $900 a month in Social Security. There's no way you can spend a third of your monthly income to spay or neuter your pet.
Sure. Well, so, okay, so. The task force made this recommendation, and from there you kind of made this proposal. And if I follow this, then that sort of led to launching First Coast No More Homeless Pets. I mean, what was there beyond kind of what you had studied and learned both coming into the task force and then, of course, as a result of the task force, was there, a vision that you also specifically brought, to this that was your own beyond kind of what you had arrived at through the task force efforts?
Well, I can't say that, I invented any of this stuff or any of it was my own vision, but the vision I really had for Jacksonville and for Northeast Florida and beyond was to create a no-kill community, a community where dogs and cats didn't die in the shelters just because they didn't have any homes. And that was really the vision. And that was the mission that we set forth for First Coast No More Homeless Pets.
Yeah, I guess the mandate's pretty clear, right? It's right there in the name, to a large extent, right? Yeah. So
exactly.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, our good friends, Best Friends Animal Society in Kanab, Utah, were the ones that really came up with that name, and that's why I just wanted to stress that it really wasn't, it wasn't my idea. I didn't reinvent the wheel.
Yeah.
Best Friends was running a program called No More Homeless Pets Utah, and we used that name with permission from Best Friends because it was such a, so closely aligned with what we were trying to do here in Northeast Florida.
Sure, and that sounds like an ongoing relationship. We'll maybe get into that in a moment, too, about how they've kind of worked together and they've supported your efforts and vice versa, I guess you could say. But first, let me just let folks know, this is Talking Animals. If you just tuned in, we're speaking with Rick Ducharme, founder and director of First Coast No More Homeless Pets. If you'd like to ask Rick a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663 or email dj@wmnf.org. So, what was the climate like back then in 2002, basically when First Coast was launched, just in the community at large, regarding spay neuter and regarding euthanasia? I mean, you've noted that Best Friends was using No More Homeless Pets, but to what extent, for example, was the phrase no kill even invoked much at that point?
Well, it was new, and it was certainly new in Northeast Florida, I think. There were a few of us individuals that were really pushing the no-kill agenda. Deborah Hogue, who was on the board at the Jacksonville Humane Society at the time, was one of those, and several other local people. And it didn't take long after, after some of us started talking about it, that other people started talking about it too, but it was by far not mainstream. And I don't know, I was trying to remember the first time we ever heard the mayor here say the words no kill, and we were all pretty impressed. It's been a while now, and we've had several administrations endorse the whole concept, at least in practice, if not actually come right out and say it.
But, sure.
I'm sorry, I lost where that whole thing was going there, Duncan.
Well, yeah, no, I think we were just talking about kind of the climate and just what the attitudes back then were, at large regarding spay neuter, euthanasia, the no-kill phrase being, as I recall, at least fairly, limited usage in a lot of areas then. So it sounds like you were kind of agreeing that at that point it was no-kill in particular was something you didn't hear much in those kind of conversations.
You actually didn't hear much, and when you did, it was often considered a divisive term, and sometimes still can be, but in Northeast Florida now, we pretty much all the shelters, even the shelters in the adjoining counties, for the most part, have, sort of grasped that goal of becoming a no-kill shelter and a no-kill community, because really individual shelters becoming no-kill isn't a great thing, but the whole community becoming no-kill is really what is remarkable and what our goal is.
And you just touched on a key thing that I want to dive right into, which is kind of how even a certain phrase, much less the idea behind it, can be so divisive in a community. I just want to quickly, before we get into that, I just want to sort of rattle off a few kind of numbers and statistics, just because from when you launched First Coast No More Homeless Pets in 2003, just a few numbers that I think might be helpful for the conversation moving forward. There were, by statistics I saw, around 23,000 and change total pets euthanized in Duval County in maybe the last time, at least that I had access to records, 2010, 2011, there were 8,000, so basically a third. And similarly, in that same period, 2002, 2003, there were 2,900, let's call it 3,000 spay and neuter surgeries in the entire city. And again, 8, 9 years later, 2010, 2011, there were 24,000 and change. So pretty dramatic shifts in critical numbers there. So with that in mind, let's talk a little about something you just alluded to that I think is hugely interesting, and I think for a lot of counties, communities, other places, where almost the whole ball game kind of resides, which is how divisive these issues seem to be. I mean, you've been doing this sort of work obviously for several years. You travel around. I mean, how do you think Jacksonville, Duval compares with other cities and counties around the world in terms of the attitudes maybe when you started and the attitudes now? I'm sure are pretty supportive, but it does seem like when you talk about feral or community cats, when you talk about no kill, it's enormously polarizing in a lot of areas. Why is that?
Well, that's a pretty deep subject, and a couple clarifications on some of the numbers. The surgery numbers you mentioned were actually the targeted surgeries that our organization was performing.
Oh, okay.
And not surgeries in the whole city.
Okay.
Of course, all the local veterinarians are doing surgeries, too.
Okay.
And good news to report, too, is that this past year, which the city's fiscal year ended September 30th, the number of euthanasias was actually down to 5,091. So
wow.
We've made great progress even over the last year in the numbers that you have.
Yeah.
So that's great. I think the fact is that the no-kill concept and wanting to kill less pets in shelters and to find more pets' homes is not polarizing in itself. That is not. Now, some of the terminology can be, and some of the ways that people think they need to address the problem can be polarizing, I believe, certainly.
Yeah.
If, for the most part, if you ask, if you do a survey of, any number of people, I would say somewhere between 70 to 90% of them are going to say, if you have other options, don't kill the animals.
Yeah.
Now, so it's not really polarizing to do that. What happens, though, is, say, and using the idea of community cats or feral cats, it's not, you know, even in surveys that have been done in Ohio and other places around the country, when polled, people always say, well, it's better to fix the cats and put them back than kill them by almost like 70%. So, you know, the concept of fixing cats and returning them to their communities to live out their lives is not really, you know, that polarizing. But what it is that the vocal minority of people that are against that type of idea, I think, are the ones that, you know, that sort of make it a polarizing idea. I mean, otherwise, most people, you know, 7 out of 10 people are probably, you know, great with it. 1 or 2 people probably really don't care one way or the other, kill them or stick them back out, whatever you want to do. And then the other 1 or 2 people, you know, they're totally against the idea,
yeah,
for whatever reason.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, you'd sort of wonder at the surface, like, well, who typically is lining up in the pro-kill camp? But but it does seem like, let's talk a little bit more about how areas, including your own, obviously, handle feral/community cats. And certainly near where I'm speaking to you, in the counties immediately nearby, Hillsborough in particular, but others, Pasco, Pinellas, there just seems to be a lot of, feuding, really, I guess, about how that should handle, and should feral cats be, left in their colonies? Should TNR or TNVR continue? So with the kind of success that you've had, but again, I'm sure along the way there have been the vocal minority that you mentioned, and maybe other forces that were sort of resistant to it, and maybe even still now, although with the kind of, you know, results you've shown, I would think that would be a very small number. But why would people here or anywhere else, what's really underneath it? I mean, to be really cynical, is it just about kind of money in a certain respect?
Well, I think one fact that we should maybe, you know, get right out front is, you know, in Duval County, which we're a population of about 830,000, about 3,000 to 4,000 community cats or feral cats come into the shelter every year. I think in Hillsborough County, you're about 1.2 million, and I think maybe 5,000 or 6,000 or even a few more, maybe 8,000 feral cats, community cats come into the shelter there. In Duval County, using formulas that, you know, scientists at UF Florida and other places have come up with, there could be as many as 130,000 to 160,000 feral cats in Duval County. And in Hillsborough County, that number probably is, you know, closer to 200,000 feral cats. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I haven't done the numbers, but
yeah,
it's somewhere around there. So the fact is that what we do with the 3,000 or 4,000 feral cats that come into Duval County's animal control, or what Hillsborough County does with the, you know, 6,000 or 8,000 feral cats that come into Hillsborough County animal control, aren't going to have a huge impact on the overall population of feral cats out there. That's just, you know, that's just how it is. In fact, when you remove feral cats and the cats that are left, you know, left out there, which, in, you know, anytime you're removing and killing cats, you're never trapping all of the cats.
Yeah.
So the cats that are left out there are going to breed even more to fill the void left by the cats that have been picked up.
Right.
The food source is still there. So, you know, combating feral cats by trapping them and killing them isn't making much of a difference. And I really can't believe it's making anybody feel better. So, you know, I mean, I don't think anybody says, well, I did a good job today. I trapped 100 cats and killed them. I mean, that
right.
People, you know, even the people in the shelters that have to do that type of work really don't like it. So if it's not making any difference to the community and it makes everybody feel horrible, why would you even do it, you know? It's certainly not humane to the cats, and it's not making any difference in the community. So, sure, you might trap up a bunch of cats that are living in a park or in one area, and, you know, there won't be a huge problem for a while, but the cats that are left are still breeding, and there's still a food source around there probably. So it's not as easy as just trapping the cats. And the other thing that we often hear people say is, well, I don't want you to kill the cats, I just want you to take them away. The fact is, there is nowhere to take them away. There is no farm out in the country that we can send all the kitty cats to.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the fact. I mean, there's two choices. Fix them and return them, or trap them and kill them.
Yeah.
And there just aren't a lot of other choices. When I ask people in a room full of people, I say, okay, who in this room can I send some feral cats over to their house tonight? Because we got extras. Nobody raises their hand, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, so with that in mind, maybe you could talk a little bit about the Feral Freedom Program, for example.
Absolutely. And I wish I would have jotted down the name of the newspaper. But just this week, somebody sent me a link to a newspaper, I believe it was in San Jose, California, or somewhere close there. And the newspaper said that the Feral Freedom Program was a new way of handling feral or outdoor cats that was sweeping the nation. And that's really cool to hear.
Wow.
Because in July or August, actually, of 2008, in Duval County, the decision was made by the county to quit killing feral cats and community cats that came into the shelter. And that year, they offered to give to First Coast No More Homeless Pets all the outdoor cats that came into the shelter. And the key is outdoor cats are living outdoors and doing well. They offered to turn those over to First Coast No More Homeless Pets if we were willing to spay and neuter them and vaccinate them and ear tip them and return them to where they come from. And so we took them up on that offer, and ever since then, feral cats have not been killed in Duval County, with very few exceptions, and it's worked great since then. About 20,000 feral cats have saved their lives here in Duval County, and the program's been so successful here in Duval that it's been emulated across the country in places like Charleston, South Carolina, Austin, Texas, San Jose, California, Albuquerque, New Mexico. I mean, it's just the list is growing and growing. I don't even know all the cities anymore that are doing a feral freedom type program.
And
what happened? Go ahead.
Oh, Rick, I was just going to quickly ask. In each of those cases, are they calling it the feral freedom? So acknowledging that it is sort of, you know, another child of the parent program that you guys began back in 2008.
Some of them, and some of them are calling them different things. And
uh-huh.
Some of them aren't calling it anything.
Right. They're just doing it.
Exactly. Just
yeah.
Doing it. And it's, you know, whatever they're calling it. And a lot of them are hybrid type, where they may only be doing a couple zip codes in a community.
Yeah.
To test it out. When often that's how communities get started with it. And they realize quickly that there is no issue. But for those that don't know exactly what we're talking about, basically people that bring community cats or outdoor cats into the city, now, instead of just taking them and marching them right back to be euthanized, you know, as long as they were doing well and living outside, the city just turns them over to us for spay and neuter. And it's worked out really well here in Jacksonville, and we get very few community complaints anymore. The first year we got maybe a dozen complaints or so, but to be honest with you, I don't remember the last complaint we had here in Duval County about the program. People just started to accept it now, the fact that we no longer kill these cats in Duval County.
And just so I'm clear and people listening are clear, Rick, so people bring the feral / community cats to First Coast, they are spayed or neutered, and then are they returned to the colony or wherever they had first been found and brought in to you guys? Is that...
Well, Duncan, that's a normal TNR program, and
right.
We do a lot of that in Duval County. We do about 9,000 cats a year where people trap them themselves and bring them to us.
Right.
And we do a $20 or $25 spay and neuter and tip and vaccinate, and then the people take the cats back and they turn them themselves. However, this program is for the cats that are being brought into animal control that were trapped mostly by citizens because they were exhibiting some type of nuisance behaviors. And usually we find that those nuisance behaviors, which usually involve fighting or mating or biting or yowling or marking, are solved by sterilization. If you spay and neuter the cat, obviously they're not going to, you know, they're not going to mate anymore, and they're a lot less likely to fight. And studies have shown that cats roam a lot less further from their food source once they're sterilized as well. And I think something that's interesting is, although we've done over 20,000 cats through the Feral Freedom Program here in Duval County,
mm-hmm.
and we do about 9,000 feral cats or community cats in Duval County in addition to those every year. So in the last 4 years, we've probably done 12, 20, about 50,000 feral cats in Duval County, and very seldom do ear-tipped cats end up at animal control. We see, you know, less than 24 a year of ear-tipped cats, which are cats that are sterilized, yeah, ending up at animal control. And so I think that proves that once the cats are sterilized and vaccinated, they're a lot less of a nuisance than they were before, and they're just not a problem. You know, they don't really cause the issues that cause them to end up at animal control. And so I think it shows that TNR works in a number of different ways.
Right. So it does. It's a broader approach, and not coincidentally, then it's solving a broader array of difficulties with those kind of cats.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So this is Talk Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. I'm speaking with Rick Ducharme, founder and director of First Coast No More Homeless Pets. We're sort of in the last moment or two, but if you'd like to quickly join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663 or emailing dj@wmnf.org, we invite you to do so, including an email question here. It says, thank you to your guest for his great work. A woman in our South Florida area was recently fined and hauled into court for feeding feral cats at an abandoned business. She was fined by animal control for trespassing. She had been feeding these 20 cats for 5 years. Isn't that crazy? Looking for your response.
Well, it's important that when you are feeding cats to make sure you have the permission of the property owner. In that case, if there's an abandoned business, I don't know that she was really causing any harm. But the fact is, if I have property and I don't want cats to be living on my property, then I shouldn't be forced to accept that. You know, now that doesn't say that we should pick up the cats and take them in and kill them, but the property owner has every right to exclude cats from their property. In that case, if people don't want the cats on their property, you just need to find a better place to feed them and slowly feed, you know, move the feeding station away from their property. And I think it's important to remember that although feral cats may have the right to be in the community, there still are private property rights, and people cannot invade other people's property to feed cats. And if you're going to take care of community cats or outdoor cats, you really have to do it in a responsible way so that you're not a nuisance to the community yourself.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Let's try to get at least one quick call in before we're sort of nearing the end of our time. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Rick Ducharme.
Hello. Okay, great. I'll quickly say, years ago, I'm retired now, but years ago I was a vet tech with the Humane Society in Atlanta, and I recognize a lot of the problems that you're talking about. And I think the feral cat idea is great. But recently I was trying to find a small dog for my grandson, and I went into several shelters. And it's really alarming how many of those animals, the dogs, are pit bull mixes. I have nothing against pit bulls per se. I know they can be very sweet dogs and loyal companions, but they're just predominantly loaded with pit bulls. Can maybe offering free pit bull spays and neuters would help or something, because they are a big dog, and if they're not properly trained, they grow up to be a potential danger to people. Do you have any comments on that?
I do. That's a very astute observation there. It's very true. In fact, shelters throughout the country have that very same issue. In Duval County, we do offer free pit bull surgeries to anybody with pits and pit mixes. They're great dogs. Don't get me wrong. I agree with the caller 100% on that. It's just that there's so many of them out there. And when you walk through the shelters, you know, there's huge amounts of pits and pit mixes, but even what we just call big yellow dogs and big brown dogs. And really, that's one of our biggest challenges here in Duval County, is reaching that final no-kill movement, is those big dogs that we still have to find homes for. But I think it's important that pit bulls and other types of dogs that, you know, have those stereotypes, just like anything else, you need to treat those animals as individuals. Because I'll tell you, most pit bulls and pit bull mixes and those types of dogs are great pets, and they're great dogs and great individuals, but you can't stereotype the whole breed, and that's what happens so often. But
I agree with you on that, but it just seems like the majority of the large dogs in the, it was a Pasco County animal control shelter, were some sort of pit or pit mix, and it's something in the mindset of the people that own them, or, you know, they are they have the equipment and the mind, the dog is bred for something. I have sighthounds, greyhounds and such, and they're bred for, you know, sight hunting, and they have certain characteristics if you're close enough to what the breed was bred for. Some of that mentality is still in the dog. I mean, they may be aggressive to dogs, but not to their owners. But a lot of people don't, another thing, obedience train dogs, especially not the big dogs. And that's when you really have a problem, in my opinion. You have a big dog that comes in, some guy brings him in on a chain, he says, he's bad, you know, and it's like, oh, my gosh, not another one of those. I just encourage, you know, anything that big dogs or, I don't know, it just seems to be a fad right now.
Well, I appreciate your call, and I think you've raised a really important point, and I agree, and it sounds like Rick does, that there should be all kinds of measures taken to encourage folks to adopt those dogs.
Okay, thanks. Keep up the good work. I'll just keep listening.
Thank you very much.
You bet.
Okay, Rick. We're sort of almost even over time, but let me hit a couple of quick emails that pertain more to the. Well, let's hit this one. The first is that we have a great feral cat colony keepers here, but they need help. I urge people that are concerned about the senseless killing of feral cats and the more sensible way of controlling their numbers by TNVR to attend the Animal Advisory Council Task Force meeting tonight at 6 p.m. at the County Center, 601 East Kennedy Boulevard, and speak up about that. And then maybe one final question for you, Rick, also an emailer, and we are really short on time, so maybe just, you know, a minute or less on this if you could. I know it's hard, but opponents of no-kill here say that the quality of adoptions must necessarily decrease as the quantity of adoptions increases, and we'll see a lot more animal abuse. What has been your experience?
I couldn't disagree more. We have huge adoption events here in Duval County where in one weekend we'll adopt out 800 or 900 pets, and we don't have any higher rate of return with those pets than any other. And there have definitely been studies. In fact, if you go to Maddie's.org, that's a website of Maddie's Fund, they've got studies at Maddie's Institute that show that the rate of return and the rate of issues with pets from free adoptions and from large adoption events are no higher than any other adoption. And to be honest with you, I don't think that you can screen for people that abuse pets. You know, I think that for one thing, those people probably are not going to shelters to get their pets because it's not that difficult to find a dog or cat. And if we deny adoptions to people for whatever reason, they're still going to get a dog or a cat. They're just going to go buy one from a puppy mill or a breeder or a backyard breeder or a flea market or somewhere like that. So let's put an adopted pet into that home. And if we ask the dog or cat, you want to take a chance with this guy that might be a little questionable, but we think he's a good guy, or do you want to die in the shelter? That dog or cat's going to say, hey, give me a chance. Let me go with the guy that's a little questionable, you know?
Right. Near and dear to my heart, a good answer and a talking animal. That's exactly what we love here on Talking
there
Animals.
There you go, so, talking animal.
Right. So, Rick, okay, we are sort of, unfortunately, at the end of our time. There was other things I was hoping to get to, but we had some great emailers and great callers. So, again, this has been Rick Ducharme, founder and director of First Coast No More Homeless Pets in Jacksonville, Florida. And the website is simply the first letters of each of those words, FCNMHP.org. So thanks again for making the time to join us on Talking Animals today, Rick, and thanks for all your great work over the years.
Thank you, Duncan, and thanks for all your great work and the great callers. Have a good day.
All right, thank you so much. All right, in just a few minutes, we'll speak with Marilyn Weaver about a yard sale fundraiser being held this Saturday in Brandon to benefit Wildlife Haven Rehab in Odessa. Right now, though, let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. This is Kevin Nealon with a piece called Cows on the Roof on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
Most animals are smart, although, you know, I remember during the tsunami in Sri Lanka, I read about this. The animals, they have like a sixth sense. They knew it was coming, and they took off for the hills the day before it happened. They all survived. They didn't tell anybody else. They kept it a secret. Come on, just us. Come on, keep it quiet. Move it along. Let's go. But I have a whole newfound respect for animals now. I give them a lot more credit. In fact, now when I see a dog chasing a car, I will chase that car too. Oh, yeah. Animals are something. I rescued a couple of cats not long ago. Hey, do your cats throw up all night long? Is that what they do? Is that the MO? I mean, all night long, all I heard was, whoa! And I wake up in the morning, and there is puke everywhere. It's like living in a fraternity house or something, you know? It's just crazy. And you know what? Not even puke. They're hairballs. And I know that because I sifted through it with a little stick. Couple of berries, but mostly hair. Mostly hair. Yeah. And you got to get it off the carpet quick, otherwise it stains. You've got to make a decision. Either get them off or let them accumulate and become like a sticky shag carpet after a while. Animals are smart. That's all I'm going to say. I watch the Weather Channel. They always show the floods in the middle. They show the cow up on the roof, you know, surrounded by water. I don't know how she gets up there. I guess she comes up the stairs, I guess. Do they have stairs in a barn? I don't know. I don't know. She comes up the stairs, crawls out the window, grapples up to the roof, just waits it out. They should show that. They should show that. Maybe they should have the Cow Network. I'd watch the Cow Network. But even here in California, you know, the animals warn you before an earthquake. They'll start barking like crazy. The dogs, you know, the cats will hide under the cars. You just have to know the signals, what to look for. Okay, like if you live in the Midwest, right, and you're going down the stairs and there's a cow coming up the other way, you get the boots. You get the boots. It's common sense.
All right, Kevin Nealon with a piece called Cows on the Roof, taken from his album Now Hear Me Out. And at the moment now, speaking on behalf of Wildlife Haven Rehab, the organization being benefited by the yard sale being held this Saturday in Brandon, let's welcome Marilyn Weaver to Talk Animals. Good morning, Marilyn.
Good morning, Duncan. Thank you so much for doing this for us.
Absolutely. We're always happy to help. This sounds like a cool thing that happened. So first, let's get the, maybe just give us the nickel tour of Wildlife Haven Rehab. What is it and what is its mission?
Yes, a lot of people don't even know that it exists. And when they find wildlife on the road injured or dead or birds out of a nest, they have no idea what to do. Wildlife Haven Rehab is in Odessa, and they have a website that explains exactly what to do in the meantime. And, of course, you can always call them, and they will come and rescue the animals. And they do that 24/7, actually. So that is available, but it's not known by most people. So sometimes you can just Google wildlife rescue and then put in a county, and it'll pull up the names.
Great.
So they play a very important part because of all the wildlife that's around us here.
Yeah. And you just made a quick, before we were sort of getting on the air here, you made a quick point about the deer and sort of a timely reminder, if you want to mention that briefly.
Yes. You know, it's mating season now for deer. And because we live in a community with so many people everywhere and cars zooming by, when you're on a road and there's lots of vegetation and wild areas to your right and left, people don't realize that there are deer in there. And at any moment, they could dart out looking for a mate, and they cross the road and they get hit. It's happening very frequently. In Pinellas County, we contacted our commissioners, and they put up signs that indicated it's a deer crossing. But people still zoom by, and we have to be cognizant of that. Slow down.
Sure.
You know, it's only a few seconds of your time, and we'll save a life. Because I've seen dead deer on the road. In fact, one was a mom. She was pregnant. And so it's heartrending.
Right. Well, slow down. Throw some caution and help our dear friends. So,
yes.
Marilyn. So again, we should just maybe quickly again say that the website for Wildlife Haven Rehab is simply wildlifehavenrehab.org.
Yes.
And then let's talk for a moment or two, Marilyn, about the Saturday's yard sale.
Yeah. From what I understand, they've gotten some very great donations of all kinds of items, including furniture. And it's being held on Saturday from 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. It's very near the Animal Services of Hillsborough County.
Mm-hmm.
It's at 203 South Falkenberg Road. And it's called Brandon, but it's Tampa. It's
mm-hmm.
a section of Tampa. There's going to be a generous gift basket raffled off. And, of course, all the proceeds will go to this 501c3. And that will pay for food, medical, and housing of injured and orphaned wildlife. So it's a very good cause. So we encourage people to come out and they can get great buys. really great buys.
And also, if I'm not mistaken, Marilyn, this yard sale happens every year. It's just that a different nonprofit animal organization is selected each year to benefit from the proceeds, correct?
Yes, and it's a couple that do this, Mark and Wendy Taylor. Every year they decide on helping an individual local rescue. So a lot of work goes into it, and they do it every year. And, of course, if people need more information, they can call them. I have a phone number.
Okay, I was wondering if there was either a website or a Facebook page where people could find out more specifically about the yard sale as opposed to strictly the wildlife haven rehab.
Yeah, Mark and Wendy's number is 813-839-3474, and they can give you all the information. But it's being held at the Sunoco Tampa office parking lot, and that's Sunoco like the gas station.
Right.
And again, at 203 South Falkenberg Road in Tampa. It's a few blocks from the Hillsborough County Animal Services. And again, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m.
Right. And again, that's this Saturday, January 12th, that we're talking about.
Right.
So.
It's for a very good cause. And they really need a lot of help. These people don't have any time to do fundraising. It's so intensive in on-hands work there, all kinds of wildlife. So they work themselves to death. And there's no time to raise money.
Sure. No, well, this would be a great boon. So if you need anything, and really, since it's pretty much all day on Saturday, you can go by any time and pick up some cool items for the house or for a friend or whatever and help Wildlife Haven Rehab in the process. So, Marilyn, thanks so much for filling us in and for taking the time to talk with us on Talking Animals
it's
today.
It's my pleasure, and thank you for doing what you do, Duncan.
Thank you. All right. We'll talk to you soon. Take care now.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. I'm Duncan Strauss. Towards the end of the show, which we're rapidly nearing, we'll play Name That Animal Tune. The winner will receive a pair of tickets to see Mavis Staples January 19th at the Mahaffey in St. Petersburg. Wait! You're saying I could win tickets to see that Mavis Staples? The great Mavis Staples? Indeed, that's the one. And you can win a pair of tickets to see her in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Right now, though, it's time for the Animal News and Announcement segment, a look at items of interest in animal news, as well as announcements of local events on the horizon. So let's, just by way of kind of a peripheral follow-up to our ringling panel discussion last Wednesday, I've seen all kinds of things just generally about ringling in various places, from Wayne Pacelli, the head of the Humane Society of the U.S., writing about in the wake sort of the ASPCA judgment that we talked about, settling the lawsuit last week. He was writing in the Wall Street Journal, listening to letters to the editor and the paper over near me, Palm Beach Post. And just yesterday, there was quite a long piece in the Daily Beast by author Paul Alexander, who, reading through this at least, seems to be, at least philosophically aligned with ringling, shall we say. So, anyway, just wanted to call your attention to that. I'm going to quickly hit a few items before we run out of time. Starting with Paul Watson, the head of Sea Shepherd, been on the show a number of times over the year. He has stepped down as the head of Sea Shepherd Conservation Society after being named in a U.S. court order preventing him from approaching Japanese whaling fleets. The Toronto-born anti-whaling crusader who holds dual Canadian-U.S. citizenship said he would respect the U.S. Court of Appeals decision issued in December, which overturned a prior ruling in Sea Shepherd's favor. According to the Society's website, Japan's Institute for Cetacean Research, which Sea Shepherd calls a front for illegal government-subsidized whaling, lost a preliminary injunction in the U.S. last February. That injunction, sought by the IARC, was to stop the Society from approaching them in the Antarctic. I will respect and comply with the ruling of the United States Ninth District Court. Will not violate the temporary injunction granted to the Institute for Cetacean Research. Watson said in a statement, the latest injunction issued by the U.S. court prevents Sea Shepherd from being within 450 meters of Japanese whaling vessels. And I meant to get this last week, but didn't. SeaWorld plans to go public. Looks like Shamu may soon be making a splash in the stock market. The company, famous for water shows featuring killer whales, dolphins, and other animals, at SeaWorld said recently that it is planning to go public. SeaWorld Entertainment has filed for initial public offering of stock aimed at raising $100 million. That number is likely to change as the company's bankers gauge interest from investors. From its origins as a Busch Gardens Animal Park at Anheuser-Busch Tampa Budweiser Brewery, the company has grown to span 11 theme parks, housing 67,000 animals, and etc. Bum day, noted by the Miami Herald, both a rhino and a tiger died there yesterday. Or actually, I guess, sorry, this was on Monday. And, well, just going to not be able to get to all these today, I'm afraid. But one thing I want to be sure to mention, the Kenya Wildlife Service says its rangers are pursuing a poaching gang believed to have killed 11 elephants for their ivory tusks. KWS said Monday that an entire family of elephants died in a gunfire attack on Saturday. The poachers chopped off the elephants' tusks and carted them away. KWS believes a gang of 10 was responsible for the slaughter. The killings took place in Tsavo National Park, the country's largest single continuous ecosystem, home to some 13,000 elephants. Elephant poaching deaths are on the rise across Africa because of increased demand from Asia, and particularly from China, for ivory trinkets. Poor African villagers can earn vast sums relative to their normal earning power for killing an elephant and taking its tusks. All right. I'm Duncan Strauss. This is Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to name that animal tune. This is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WNF member to win. There'll be a prize, a pair of tickets to see Mavis Staples January 19th at the Mojave in St. Petersburg to the first person who calls in the correct title of this animal song to 813-239-9663. It's Name That Animal Tune on Talking Animals, and believe me, I think this is a gimme.
Who let the dogs out?
Was nice, the party was pumping. And everybody having a ball.
All right. Oh, we look like we can. Surprisingly, we've got some callers. Hold on. Hi, you're on Talking Animals. Can you name that animal tune? Hi, you're on Talking Animals. Can you name that animal tune?
Sure can. It's Who Let the Dogs Out.
Yeah, I think we couldn't possibly have made it any easier. But
I don't think
yeah.
So. Right. You threw me a bone.
Sir. Yeah, well, exactly, so to speak. We aim to please. What is your first name, sir?
My name is Ethan.
Ethan? Okay, cool. I'll come back and get your information and get you set up to see Mavis Staples January 19th at the Mojave in St. Petersburg. Wow, I envy you. That's really cool. Congratulations.
It's very cool. Thank you very
all
much.
Right.
I'll hang out.
All right. Let's put you on back on hold. Okay, folks, we do have a winner, and we have just about reached the end of today's edition of Talking Animals on WNF Tampa. We'll be back next Wednesday, January 16th, with another edition of the show. I hope you'll join me for that. I also hope you'll visit our website, talkinganimals.net, where we make available all sorts of information, as well as archives and podcasts of past Talking Animals programs. I'm Duncan Strauss. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And, of course, as always, Talking Animals broadcast outreach consultant is Libby Busalis. My thanks to her. Stay tuned for the wonderful Scott Elliott and the All-Souls edition of It's the Music, airing next, noon to 3. We're closing out today's show with an animal song influenced by Flea, our beloved Flea. Earlier in the week, I was singing about dog and cat songs to play on today's show. And he played this one on his great show, the Monday edition of It's the Music, from noon to 3 every Monday, and sent it out to me and our dog, a Labrador named Daisy. So while it doesn't quite fit as neatly with the song, this goes back out to Flea and his Labrador named Frankie. This is Amy Mann with Labrador taking us up to the NPR News on WMNF, Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, Weeki Wachee, and beyond. Thanks for listening. Speak with you again next Wednesday at 11 a.m. on Talking Animals. Thanks and take care.
Daisy. to just so incapable.